had something for them to drink. Nowadays, I shut off the machines and the phones, and you pray, of course. We read what I just read to you. We pocket our pride. We talk about that for a few minutes. We pray. I take out a little pencil and paper so I can write down the threads of the isms that I start hearing, and I just listen. And they talk and they cry and they do all those things, and they get to the one thing that they can't get out. You know it's coming. You see the gulping. You hear the, you know, it's not any different. And that's when your compassion just absolutely takes over. That's when the Spirit of God comes between two human beings. That's when the healing begins and starts, and that's the miracle of this that you cannot describe to a pastor standing out in a parking lot. You cannot describe this to him. That thing that happens for us, the magic of working these steps, takes over. God comes in the room. He is there. I've seen clouds. I've seen whiteness. I've had mist. I've had all kinds of magnificent things wrap around another human being with me sitting across a room and watching them. Some of them in this very room tonight, today, whenever this is. It is magnificent to watch another human being be healed in front of your eyes. It's something you don't want to miss. And you can't screw it up. When I had a fireplace, we burned it. When I didn't, we flushed it down the commode. I had one guy, I really hate this, but he says, he tore it up, told the guy to pee on it, and then flush it. And he said, now if you ever want any of that stuff, go back and get it. And it's like, ooh. And it is gone from your life. It is gone. It's gone. And then you skip, jump, and holler. And as the days pass, what happens is so miraculous it can't be described, can it? As the days pass, your shoulders are a little bit back. Your head's up, and you feel the Spirit of God like you've never felt Him before. The promises start coming true. The promises are after, what is it, the ninth step? And they say right in the middle of that, it says halfway through. These promises start coming through. Half of nine is 4.5, which is right in the middle of your fifth step, some genius come up with. But it's so true. There's nothing to be afraid of the fifth step except our pride. That's the only thing that holds us back. And it is so marvelous. The results of it are so fantastic that you don't ever, never want to not take it. So when you get through with the fifth step, what comes next? Get rid of this stuff. As I said, I have this little pencil and paper, and I write down the isms that I see, and I point them out to them and tell them, this is what I want you to do. But you go home and get your big book and read what it says there, returning home, da 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 da. It says, if we can answer these questions satisfactorily, we look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as indispensable. Are you now ready to let God remove from you all the things which have admitted are objectionable? Are you ready? Of course, that stuff hurts. Can He now take all of them, every one? Every characteristic that has been listed by your sponsor and handed to you, which is all the isms that we just discussed. Some of them are evident real quick, as it says. The fourth step is a lifetime process. Some of those are more obvious than the others. The other ones will come sooner or later. I just found out I was vindictive a few years ago. Believe that or not. I didn't think I was vindictive. When we're ready, we say something like this. This is a seventh step prayer, and I tell them after their hour to kneel and pray and say this. This is exactly what was told to me. This is exactly what I did. My Creator, I am willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. When I read that, I had a spiritual awakening, a spiritual experience from that sentence. Creator, that you should have all of me, good and bad. I thought before you could approach the throne, you had to be all good. That you could not walk to God with the bad in hand. I thought that had to be taken care of first. And when I saw that God would take the good and the bad from me, it was the first time I ever realized what God's grace meant. That was it. And it was a real spiritual experience for me. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character And at this point, I stopped and I read each individual thing that was pointed out to me, and that's what I tell my people. Read out loud every single thing that was pointed out to you at that point. These stand in my way of useless to you, my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. At that point, I was told, and I have realized, you have to agree with that statement. You have to agree that God's taken these from you, that they're gone. This is what I have found out through some experiences. People do 1 through 5, and then they kind of stop. They think the 6th step is a theory, and you kind of waver at that. What we have to learn is that God removes those. It's exactly like I say, Kay, pick up that chair and bring it over here. If she sits in that chair and never moves, it's nothing's happening. But if she literally, physically picks that up and brings it over here and leaves it, the chair is here. She no longer has it. And that's why I had to be told, and I had to get in my head, when I say, God, these are yours, these are these character defects, please take them, to leave them there. I can't use them anymore. Jack told me, Jack Clater, character defects are no big deal. They're just character defects. And we use those character defects as defenses. And the example I always like to use is my lying. I lied a lot. I told you I was something I wasn't, or that I did something that I didn't do. I would lie to you in many forms or fashion to get your approval, to get myself out of trouble. I lied a lot. So when I asked for this character defect to be removed and to agree on that, I try not to lie. Today, all these years later, I don't, unless it's absolutely necessary. Now let me tell you what happens when I start lying to you. My throat starts feeling scratchy. My little heart starts pounding. My chest kind of gets tight, and it's uncomfortable. And then when I leave your presence and I go walking off, it's like, oh man. And you know why it feels so bad? Because it no longer belongs to me. God removed it. It is not mine now to use. So when I'm trying to take something that doesn't belong to me, it's very uncomfortable and it don't work. It doesn't fit. So if I'm talking to you and I start stumbling in the middle of a sentence and go, you can pretty well tell, oops, she's trying to back out of a lie. Because it's very hard for me to do that anymore. I do it from time to time to keep myself out of trouble. I'm not going to tell you that I don't, because I do. Especially with my boss. Woo. It's my choice to use them or not use them. I did this first inventory, and I did all these defenses, and a year later, I found myself in trouble again, and I had some of these characteristics had come back, and I was really frightened about it. I thought, I asked God to remove those character defects. Now, here they are again. Either God isn't real, or this program doesn't really work. It's just a bunch of trash. And that's a frightening thing, because I wanted God to be real, and I wanted this program to work. So I go to Jack, and I'm talking to him about it, and he explained this to me. And it took me several times of him saying it over a year's time, 3 or 4 different times, he told me this. He said, our character defects are defenses. We use them as defenses. What we ask God to do is remove the need of this character defect. And when he removes the need of that defense, there you are, standing alone. He said, we never need these defenses. If you're wrong, you can't defend yourself. If you're right, you don't need to. God is the only defense that we ever need. And it took me, like I said, 3 of these long visits with him to get this concept in my head. I don't need these characteristics anymore in my life. The fear of abandonment, I don't need, because if I'm abandoned, God's going to be there. I'm going to be all right. I don't need to lie to you. I am who I am. I'm trying to be transparent. If fear comes up, I don't belong in fear. Fear is from the lower power, not the higher power. Fear is, stops me from progressing in all those things. And so I just don't do it. I learned from this that God has a grace that's incredible. And that if I work this program just Saturday, right here, right now, God's grace covers me. And I love my little sponsor's umbrella story. She told me that the grace of God is like an umbrella, and He is standing holding this umbrella over us. And He's taken all these character defects today. We don't need them. And we live under His grace. We have the choice, if we choose to, is to step out from under the umbrella and start thinking about the past, worrying about it, regretting it, feeling the shame, the guilt, all that stuff. And if we do that, we go there alone because God's standing in today holding the umbrella over us. We also have the choice of stepping out from under the umbrella and going into the future. What am I going to do if? What if this doesn't happen? What if that does happen? If we go there, we go by ourselves. It's our expectations and all that silly stuff that we get into. So if I step back under the God's grace, the umbrella that He's holding today, this is only where God is right here today, I'm going to be okay. These characteristics do not need to be in my life. And let me tell you, the seventh step says, humbly ready. I am humbly ready. Take them. I don't need them. Take them. Get rid of them. Amen. Glory, hallelujah. The sixth and seventh step are real. They really work. We ask Him. We agree with what we have asked. We agree with God that I won't use these, that these are defenses and I don't need them. We ask the need to be removed. And you will see, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, that these happen. I don't know exactly when all this was removed. I just find myself one day, I'm doing this and I'm not afraid. Isn't this unusual? I'm doing this and I'm not lying about that. Isn't this unusual? So God does it for you very subtly. Okay, let's take a 5-minute break. Stand, stretch, potty, whatever, for 5 minutes. Y'all are doing so well. I know it's so hard after a meal to sit there. Just right. You know how last night we went to dinner last night. A whole bunch of us sat at the table. We was talking about protein and carbohydrates and this diet and that diet and how much have you lost and gained and how much of this. And I said, you know, somebody mentioned every one of us are talking about diets. I said, yeah, I know. Remember when if we were doing this a few years ago, we'd all be talking about relationships. And that's the truth. That's progression of our age. A couple years, we'd be talking about our bowel movements. When we're talking about our relationships, listen to what step 8 says right off the bat in the AA's 12 and 12. Step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Steps 8 and 9 are concerned with personal relations. First, we took a look backward to try to discover where we had been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. Third, having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop, listen to this, the best possible relations with every human being we know. This is a very large order. It is a task which may be formed with increasing skill, but never really finish. Learning how to live in the greatest peace, partnership, and brotherhood with all men and women of whatever description is a moving and fascinating adventure. If nothing else, those two paragraphs ought to turn your life around right there and make you want to run and say, I'm sorry. This says make a list. Just make a list of the people that you think you've harmed. Now, we could discuss for an hour the word harmed and what that means and your definition of harm and my definition of harmed and all that. But the best thing to do is, after you've taken your inventory and your sponsor has helped you with that, you're going to have a list of people that your sponsor's definition of harm comes out. You may never do anything with this list. All you do is make it. It's all step 8 asks you. So you can put anybody on there that you want to. Doesn't mean you'll do a thing about it, but if they come to mind, there's chances are, if they flicker across your brain, chances are they need to be on your amends list. I did, and I had the people that I sponsor make this list, and then we go over it. We take each individual person and look at what happened and see what kind of amend should be made. And our books talk about the different kinds of amends. There is the personal amend, eye to eye, of course, which is the one of choice. I've had people, and I've had to go across the country to get this done. There are the amends that you can only do by letter. They're very rare, but there are times when you can do it only by letter. There's phone calls that can be made from time to time. These are the least desirable. I've had to suck it up and step up the plate, nearly every one of mine. Then there are those amends that you are not able to make at all. But God gives you a way. It's incredible how God works with all of us. So we have this list. I go over their list. This one's personal. This one's personal. You got to go. Let's wait on this one. The only one that's a wait normally is an ex-husband, ex-boyfriend who is married. These are the ones that are really touchy. Most of the time, those are phone calls. Those are not. I had a relationship that was really not necessary. And we kept calling each other to make amends so we could see each other one more time. So you can hide behind anything in this program that you want to. In the big book, there is, I don't know, there's like 14 different ways that it points out to you, or maybe even more, of how to make amends. There's instructions, but I've lost my book, so I can't read them to you. 18, Susan said there's 18 directions on exactly how to. Kay and I said this morning, we're kind of glad we've lost our big books, because now we've got a new book that we have to underline and look at, and we might learn something new. We're thrilled that we had to get blank books to go dig through. It's a real experience. I know. I'm going to find that book. I don't need any growth. Y'all can tell I'm just about next perfect. 18 ways on how to make amends is written for you right here. Y'all can get together in your group or your sponsory and dig them out. It's fun. I'll tell you what I do, what I'm going to do at the end of this month. Every year, the people who live in California that I sponsor with me, we do a big book study weekend. And the next year, we do a 12 of 12 study. We go back and forth. I gather them all up, and we spend the whole weekend. I'm going to Susan's and Tulsa in a couple. Well, I've already done one there, and going a couple of months to do another one. And Kay's coming out to ours. And it's very, very, very important to know your literature and how the steps work. So y'all get together with your sponsor and sponsorees or your little group and dig them out. Count up the 18. It's really exciting information that we have. It's just laid out here for us so perfectly. It's incredible. Step 8 is but a beginning of the end of our isolation with every human being we know. This said, the best possible relationship with everybody. Some of my best possible relationships is speaking to them. Hello, how are you? That's a great, great relationship in that situation. I'm not unkind, I'm kind. I'm not disrespectful, I'm respectful. I'm not criticizing, I'm not gossiping. I'm not saying one thing is, this is what my sponsor goes through. Before you say anything about anyone, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Those little cutting remarks that we make about each other. If we go through these, we find that we don't need to do that any longer. And the best possible relationship I can have with you is be kind about you, not say anything about you that's unkind. Let me tell you, when my sponsor said, this year you cannot criticize, complain, condemn, or compare, I don't have much to say about nothing. It sure changes the tone of your voice. It changes your topic of conversation. And it makes a big, huge difference. Now, step 9 says we make direct amends when all possible. Direct. It means accept when to do so would injure others. I remember when I was new, I needed to make amends to this woman in the group, and I ran and made amends to her. And this is what I said. You know, I didn't used to like you, but I do now. Will you forgive me for not liking you? She looked at me kind of funny. Well, sure, honey. I was so proud of myself, I went skipping back to my sponsor, and man, what I had done was dumped on her. I dumped on her so I would feel better. And it certainly didn't make our relationship any better. And like I said, God will give you the experience. If you haven't had experience in your life, and especially this, if you're judging someone else, God will give you the experience that they're going through or their lifestyle so you can experience it. So be careful. I've been there and done that. I've judged, and God said, well, let me show you how it feels or looks or smells. And it comes to me. So I have to be very careful about all this stuff. Dumping. Period. She says, the way that I make amends has to be very, very direct. And this is what I have to say. I have to say to you, for my part in our broken relationship, these are the things that I remember that I did to you. I was wrong for my part. Will you forgive me? And I have to say it that way. Don't add or subtract, because when I say I was wrong, I'm admitting my part. I'm done. I ask them a question, will you forgive me? It's up to them whether they forgive me or not. Their response to that question is none of my business. That's their program. That's what they have to do. So it's none of my business. And I have made that kind of amend that was not forgiven. I remember when I made this amend to this lady, it wasn't very much longer, this little whippersnapper came up to me and said, I need to make amends to you. I didn't used to like you, but I do now. I said, oh, okay, honey, sure. And I got in the car and I was driving home. I thought, why didn't she like me? I've been nice to her. I haven't done anything to her. And you know, you just get going. And it just, and then I got to giggling at myself because I remember when I did the very same thing. It, God gives us every chance. God is such an awesome God. He loves me more than I will ever understand, says my sponsor. So he gives me every opportunity. My first list of amends on there was somebody I put that I didn't think I'd ever see. Hadn't seen in 10 years. Did not have any idea where they were, nothing about them. I put her on that list, and so help me, I went to a shower 2 or 3 days later. I opened the front door. Guess who the first person I saw I hadn't seen in 10 years? It was her. And I did the very best I could at the time because I was so shocked. I just said, hi, how are you? She said, I'm fine, how are you? I said, fine. And for both of us, that broke ice of years and years and years of... What I did was kind of drug her over a counter one time. She was such a smart aleck. She thought she knew it all. She was always trying to tell everybody how to do their deal. And she was trying to tell me how to do my deal. And I just kind of pulled her over the counter when I got upset with her. And when I was telling my sponge about this, she said, you know how they do? Well, list everything about her that you don't like and how wrong she is. Okay, you've done that? Great. Well, then put your name up the top. Boy, that makes me mad. And the reason I pulled her over that counter is because I was trying to tell her what to do, and I knew best, and she was trying to outdo me, and it's just I got so frustrated, I just pulled her over the counter and kind of spoke to her. And that was the best I could do. Years later, my dad was diagnosed with cancer and was dying. And I ran into her again. I worked at a drugstore for years and years and years, and her brother owned the drugstore. And this was, he had opened a second one, and I had worked out there for years, and I was at the second one one day, and she walked in. And it was like we were the oldest, best friends. And she said, well, hi, how are you? And I said, fine, how are you? She says, well, I'm not doing too good. I said, really? She said, let's go have a cup of coffee. So we went back at the little fountain and sat down and had a cup of coffee. And she said, you know what? I got cancer, and I'm dying. I said, no kidding. I'm really sorry to hear that. I said, you know what? My dad's got cancer, and he's dying. I said, this is sad. And she said, yeah. She says, you know some of the things that bother me the most? I said, what? She says, my family won't let me talk to them. I can't talk to them about my fears and how I'm going to miss them and all that stuff. And I said, no kidding. I've been wanting to tell my dad that, but I didn't think you're supposed to talk about it. So she and I sat there and talked for the longest time, telling each other all this stuff about dying and cancer, and it was the most incredible period. And I spoke to her as a family member, and she spoke to me as the dying human being. And we left to go home and talk to our family members. And I went home, and I crawled up in the middle of the bed with my dad, and I said, I'm really mad that you're dying, and I'm really going to miss you, and I want you to know that, and I love you, and this is tearing me up. And he hugged me, and my dad was not a very demonstrative person at all. And we hugged, and we cried, and we talked, and he had a glow on his face. Now, if I had not been willing to make an amends to this woman, and had not God said, well, you didn't do it right this time, let's wait a few years, and when the timing is right, I'm going to put her back in your life, and y'all are going to do this. Is that incredible? It was just awesome. So I was allowed to do that. I made amends to my mom, and she barely accepted it. I mean, my amends were pretty big amends. I humiliated and disgraced my family. I was out there in those bars and having actions that no young lady should have, and I embarrassed and humiliated them, and I got pregnant, not married, and that was terrible. And when my daughter was born, her father kicked me out, and I was very vindictive, and I started flaunting myself in front of him with another gangster that he didn't like. And one night at that bar, in drunkenness, he took a shotgun and blew this man's head off.